you go, boys and girls. Sometimes I can be good, sometimes I can be bad, and sometimes I can be really ugly. It is the 12th day of December 2016. All day today. We're hemmed in totally by snow here. Help, help, send help. Send that St. Bernard with a bunch of whiskey in a barrel. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And send your funds to Box 401, right? Okay, I got it. I got most of it. There's still a few of you that don't have your donation in for the month. Hurry up out there. We need to pay the light bill so we can shovel all this snow off of us. Last night, a teenage gal, I assume, because I'm not sure in the dark, ran her car through my fence, knocked down my boards. So they had wreckers out there pulling her out because she came within about 2 feet of running her car head first into a deep end of my creek, which is about 6 feet deep. That would have filled up her cab real quick, and she probably would have died just for being in too big of a hurry. People drive too fast. They just drive too fast. It's slicker than hell out there, man, I'll tell you. You can only go about 20 miles an hour if you're lucky to be safe. But you know how people are? They don't give a shit. They always drive fast around here and crash and get killed, and everybody whines for a while and throw them into the ground. Yeah. Well, that's the first time in several decades that anyone has run into our yard through our fence. One was way back in the, I think, 70s, when my mother was living here by herself. And then just last night, I thought we'd made it safely through all that, but I guess we didn't. Well, at least she didn't run through my patio fence into my house. That's the good part of it. She was a white girl, nice looking white girl. Her mother came around, and I was helping her mother, and I told her, I said, look, once the snow melts off here, you get somebody to come out here and put my fence back up, and we'll call it square. No big deal. And she said, oh, Mr. Metzger, you're wonderful, and put her arms around me and hugged me and pissed my gal off. No. Anyhow, let's get on with this thing. You know, winter solstice is coming up, well, on the 21st. Yeah, the 21st. That's our real celebration, a racial celebration. So in getting ready for that, I'm going to do this so many days of Christmas. It's not going to be exactly what you figured it would be. So here we go. Okay, this is entitled, No Jesus Here. How about that? Do you really think it all began with a sanctimonious Jew wonder worker strolling about the first century Palestine? Prepare to be enlightened. Jesus was my imaginary friend. Christianity was the ultimate product of religious syncretism in the ancient world. Its emergence owed nothing to a holy carpenter. There were many Jesuses, but the fable was a cultural construct. The nativity yarn is a concoction of nonsense. The genealogies of Jesus, both Matthew's version and Luke's, are pious fiction. Nazareth did not exist in the first century A.D. The area was burial ground for the rock-cut tombs. While multiple authors behind the original gospel story, it is no surprise the figure of Jesus is a mess of contradictions. Yet the story is so thinly drawn that being a good Christian might mean almost anything. The 12 disciples are as fictitious as their masters. In fact, they have to do with the 12 houses of the Zodiac. If you want to know the real basis behind all the Christian legend, It's based on the zodiac. Invented to legitimize the claims of an early churches, the original Mary was not a virgin. That idea was borrowed from pagan goddesses. The pagan world knew all about virgins getting pregnant by randy gods, the mythical Virgin Mother. Scholars have known all this for more than 200 years, and so did the Jewish rabbis. But priestcraft is a highly profitable business, and finances an industry of deceit to keep the show on the road. Quote, Jesus better documented than any other ancient figure, unquote. Don't believe a word of it. Unlike the mythical Jesus, a real historical figure like Julius Caesar has a mass of mutually supporting evidence, but Jesus doesn't. If there's nothing more funny than the Jew right, or Republicans, it's the thoroughly Jew left. I get the biggest belly laughs out of the Jew left. They mostly involved in Democrat activities because they're going absolutely batshit. They're in a psycho frenzy over this Trump winning the election. Now, it's amazing because he has a lot more Jew left support than people think, and the Jews themselves. So the Democrat Party is trying to get a hold on this thing by blaming it on the Russians. That's great. Operation Chaos in high gear. I love it. It's working out better than I ever imagined. So there's Ivan over there, symbolized Russia. He's laughing his ass off, or he's scratching his head because he knows, and most of Europe knows, the United States system, political, financial, and everything, has gone absolutely batshit crazy. I mean, they're certifiable, these guys. With a few, very few at the top that are behind so much of this, retaining their sanity, even though they are psychopaths. But every day with the Democrats and the left, Jew left news and radio talk show, they're going absolutely crazy. Are you having as much fun as I am? The right-wing conservatives are out there trying to figure out which way they're going to go, what they're going to do. And the right-wing radio people that a lot of the right-wing racist, white nationalists are following are out-and-out pro-Jew and denying anything to do with racial separation. They're just saying, well, as long as they come in and do like we do, then they're okay. It don't make any difference what color or what they think of or what their religion is or what. So you're living in a goddamn madhouse. And this is one of the reasons I keep this as an individual. You know, I put out things that I think, and I don't expect everybody to go along with it or anybody to go along with it. And that's your excuse. Crazy Metzger, did you hear what he said? Because I represent myself and you represent yourself. And I think that's been one of the problems in the past. People always looking for a grand poopah. Everyone's always looking for a duke or whoever. In this case, Ronald McDonald. But the one thing about it, we're going to have a lot of fun watching Ronald McDonald. He's going to be a barrel of laughs. And then to watch the reaction and listen to the reaction of the Jew left is it's just too much to ask for. That's all I can say. So while everybody's, all these other people are crying and moaning and trying to figure out some excuse to why they didn't win the election and all that shit, we just could sit there drinking our beer and laughing because we're not a part of it. I'm not a part of it. Let them go down the tube all together, holding hands, man. That's my position. I see that they're pushing this John Bolton again all over the television. He's a goddamn war criminal wannabe, or has been, actually. Worked with Bush on the Iraq deal. These guys, they really love war. They're war lovers. There was a movie with Steve McQueen back in the 60s called The War Lover. Well, do you ever notice you're getting pleas for donations to put monuments up and all that kind of stuff for fallen dead in the wars? If they put that much money up to prevent war, and explain and show what war really was like and what it did and what it was like to be in Dresden when they firebombed it, or London when the Germans V2'd it, or when we firebombed Tokyo and all that kind of stuff. And how would you like to have been dead center in Nagasaki, Hiroshima? I've been there. I stood right on ground zero. I just was trying to imagine how horrible it would have been. But that's what they promote here in this country, worship of war. And then they try to clean it up by asking you to donate money to make nice about these wonderful heroes. The only thing hero about war is the individual who gets talked into it and gets thrust into it and does some tremendous things to stay alive. That's a hero. Yeah, we had this, I went to see the movie Razorback Ridge. I'm telling you, it's the best combat footage reenacted I've ever seen. It was really the most brutal cuts of hand-to-hand combat between the U.S. troops and the Japanese on Okinawa. And I'm telling you, it makes a real believer out of you that war is bullshit. Politicians talk about it, initiate it, and poor working class people who should know better march off and do it. If you get a chance, go see that Razorback or Chainback Ridge. Anyhow, and it's our good buddy, what's his name, that put that film together, the one the Jews got all pissed off at. But before I finish up what I was saying about that Razorback Ridge, Chainsaw Ridge, short-term memory shot to hell, I'm going to play you a little bit something one of our guys sent me, which I've seen. This Django Unchained about the South and slavery back in the day. They don't play a lot of the verbiage in the American version, but in the foreign versions they do. So here we go. Listen to this.
Hello, Stephen, my boy.
Yeah. Hello, my ass. Who this nigga up on that nag?
Oh, Stephen, you have nails for breakfast. What's the matter? Why you so ornery? You miss me, huh?
Oh, yes, sir. I miss you like a hog miss flop, like a baby miss mammy titty. I miss you like I misses a rock in my shoe. Now, I ask you, who this nigga on that nag?
It's Snowball. You wanna know my name or the name of my horse? You ask me.
That's who the hell you calling Snowball, horse boy? I'll snatch your black ass off that nag down here in the mud so fast make your head.
Steven. Let's keep it funny. Django here is a freeman.
This nigga here?
That nigga there. Let me at least introduce the two of you. Django, this is another cheeky black bugger like yourself, Steven. Steven, this here's Django. You two ought to hate each other.
Cabot, just who the hell is this nigga you feels the need to entertain?
Django and his friend in gray here, Dr. Schultz, are customers. And they are our guests, Stephen. And you old decrepit bastard, ought to show them every hospitality. You understand that?
Yes, sir. Him, I understand, but I don't know why I got to take lip off this nigga.
You don't have to know why. Do you understand?
Yes, sir. I understand.
Well, good. They're spending night. Go up in the guest bedroom to get two ready.
He gonna stay in the big house?
Stephen, he's a slaver. It's different.
In the big house?
Well, you got a problem with that?
No, I ain't got no problem with it. If you ain't got no problem with burning the bed, the sheets, the pillowcases, everything else when this black-ass motherfucker's
gone. Now, that is my problem. They are mine to burn. Now, your problem right now is making a good impression. And I want you to start solving that problem right now and get them goddamn rooms ready.
Yes, sir, Monsieur Candy.
Go on now.
Can't believe you brought a nigga to stay in the big house. Your daddy rolling over in this goddamn grave right now. Put a nigga in the skate
park. What
shit is that?
Now!
Where is my beautiful sister? There she is! Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo!
Dr. Schultz, this attractive Southern belle is my widowed sister. Darling, you are a tonic for tired eyes.
It's against the law for niggas to ride horses in this territory.
This is my valet. My valet does not walk.
I said niggas on horses.
His name is Django. He's a free man. He can ride what he pleases.
Not on my property. Not around my niggas he can't.
My good sir, perhaps we got off on the wrong boot. Allow me to unring this bell. My name is Dr. King Schultz. This is my valet, Django. And these are our horses, Tony and Fritz. Mr. Bennett, I've been led to believe that you are a gentleman and a businessman. And it is for these attributes we've ridden from Texas to Tennessee to parley with you now. I wish to purchase one of your nigger gals.
You and your Jimmy rode from Texas to Tennessee to buy one of my nigger gals? No appointment, no nothing.
Oh, I'm afraid so.
Well, what if I was to say I don't like you or your fancy pants nigger, and I wouldn't sell you a tinker's damn? Now, what you got to say about that?
Mr. Bennett, if you are the businessman I've been led to believe you to be, I have 5,000 things I might say that could change your mind.
Well, come on inside and get yourself something cool to drink. Huh.
Mm-hmm. I could talk about for the last few hours. Seems like white folk ain't never had a bright idea in their life. It's coming up with all kinds of ways to kill your ass. Now, mind you, most of them ideas had to do with fucking with your foreign parts. Now, that may seem like a good idea, but truth is, when you snip a nigga's nuts, most of them bleed out in about 7 minutes. Most of them. More than most. Then I says, shit, bye. The niggas we sell to LaQuint Dickie got it worse than that. And they still saying, let's whip him to death. Throw him to the Mandingo. Feed him stone sour dog. I said, what's so special about that? We do that shit all the time. Hell fails. The niggas we sell to LaQuint Dickie got it worse than that. Lo and behold, out of nowhere, Miss Laura come up with the bright idea of giving your ass to the LaQuint Dickie Mining Company. And as a slave of the LaQuint Dickie Mining Company, henceforth till the day you die, all day, every day, you will be swinging a sledgehammer, turning big rocks into little rocks. Now, when you get there, they're going to take away your name
give you a number and a sledgehammer and say, get to work. One word of sass, they cuts out your tongue. They good at it, too. You won't bleed out. Oh, they does that real good. They're going to work you all day, every day, till your back give out. Then they're going to hit you in the head with a hammer, throw your ass down the nigger hole. And that will be the story of you, Django.
Them motherfuckers ain't here to buy no mandingos. They wants that girl.
Steven, what the hell are you talking about?
They playing your ass for a fool is what I'm talking about. They ain't here for no muscle-bound Jimmy. They here for that girl.
What girl? What, Hildy?
Yeah, Hildy. Her and Django. Them niggas know each other.
He just bought Eskimo Joe.
Did he give you any money?
No, not yet, but
then
they go.
Then he ain't bought diddly. Not yet, no, huh? But he's just about to buy who he come here to buy when I interrupted him. Thank you, Stephen. You're welcome, Calvin.
Where are you getting all this at? Why would they go through all that trouble for a nigga with the chewed up back ain't worth $300?
They doing it because that nigga Django's in love with Hildy. She probably his wife. Now, why that German gives a fuck who that up to some bitch is in love with, I'm sure I don't know.
She's who they want. Why this whole snake oil pitch about mandingos in?
You wouldn't pay no never mind to no $300. But that $12,000... That made you real friendly now, didn't it?
Yes, it did. His wife, huh? If it had been a snake, it would have bit me. Those lying, goddamn time. Wasting sons of bitches. Sons of bitches!
Out of New Orleans. So
there's old Ben. Hey!
Don't lay your palms flat on that tabletop! If you lift those palms off that turtle shell tabletop, Mr. Pooch is gonna let loose with both barrels that start off. There have been a lot of lies set around this dinner table here tonight, but that you can't believe. Mr. Moody, would you be so kind as to collect the pistol hanging off these boys' hips here? Thank you ever so much.
Doctor!
Where were we? Yes. I do believe you were just getting ready to make me a proposition to Bob Broomhilda. Am I right? Right. Bring out Hildy!
Get over here,
Arnold. Ah! Your ass in that garbage!
Lay your hand flat on that table.
Oh, shut your mouth!
Dr. Schultz, in Greenville, you yourself said that for the right nigga, you'd be willing to pay what some may consider is a ridiculous amount. To which me myself said, what is your definition of ridiculous? To which you said, $12,000. Now, considering y'all have ridden a whole lot of miles, went through a whole lot of trouble, and done spread a whole lot of bull to purchase this lovely lady right here, it would appear that Broomhilda is in fact the right nigger. And if y'all want to leave Candyland with Broomhilda, the price is $12,000.
And I take it you prefer the take-it-or-leave-it style of negotiation?
Yes, I do, Doctor.
You see, under the laws of Chickasaw County, Broomhilda here is my property. And I can choose to do with my property whatever I so desire. And if y'all think my price for this nigger here is too steep, what I'm gonna desire to do is...
And beat our ass to death with it, right in front of both y'all.
Easy, big fella.
Then we can examine the three dimples inside Bermilda's skull. Now! What's it gonna be, Doc? Huh? What's it gonna be?
May I lift the hands off the tabletop in order to remove my pistol?
Yes, you may.
To the man with the exceptional beard and his unexceptional nigger.
I really get motivated by that film, The Django Unchained, because I see it from a totally different perspective than most of the population. Because it shows the predatory emerging capitalist nature in the DiCaprio playing in the movie, of which obviously many plantation owners weren't that bad. But it did show that it was really mostly about money. Money played a tremendous role in this thing. And only a small percentage of the South controlled the money. Sound familiar? Yeah. The white working class got shit and shoved in it. They were left for the so-called trickle-down, which even Karl Marx recognized. Yeah, Karl Marx. I'll dig out those letters by Karl Marx and read them to you one of these days. Doesn't mean I'm a communist, but I understand labor and I understand management. So anyhow, the South was run as an aristocracy, a crudely applied aristocracy, but not any worse than others in other countries had run the slave trade and so forth. But these guys at the end, when they lost their money, these plantation owners, most of them got their money out and put them in the northern banks. In fact, a lot of the daughters of the southern planters married into banking families of the north long before the Civil War. And many of the large insurance companies in the North are still, it's hard to believe, still have slave trade money in their coffers. And many of the big insurance companies got their start from investments from the plantations. Plantation owners. This is not white racism. And this is why the white racial cause hasn't been going anywhere for a long time. Instead of admitting the crimes of the ruling class and agreeing when there's evidence to support it, they've lied and they've said, well, it didn't happen, or I'm glad it happened, or that's all right, God told us that we could do it, and all that shit. So you never can get anywhere unless you tell the truth. And you never can get any place until you come to your senses about the rottenness and criminality of the ruling class in this country. And other countries, for that matter. Because that's when they are able to manipulate you into wars of mass destruction that kills millions of common white people, regular white people. Now, in the South, it's interesting to me that the South was sort of used as a, it was a colonial situation with Britain. And Britain wanted to keep it that way. They knew that it would be better for the people coming to the United States to develop into farmers and industrial people. They knew that, but they didn't want that to happen. They wanted to keep the South as a vassal to these British mercantilists in England. They liked it that way. They didn't give a shit how bad it was for the average white person in the South. And what pains me is when I see good white men that may be involved in the Klan or whatever that give homage and bend their knee to the system of slavery because it was the worst thing that ever happened to the white race, especially here in North America. It was horrible. But yet, we still got guys down south and guys up north worshiping at that altar that those plantation owner thieving rich bastards cared about the race. Some of them did, but not enough, because they liked the tremendous profits of cotton and slave trade. And until we get that through a lot of people's heads and totally change the racial struggle, the white racial struggle in this country, we're not going to get any place. Because you got to come out and admit when our race was wrong, and our race has been wrong many times to its own detriment. That's the problem. And the inability to admit this we did wrong. If the South would have been populated with farmers like the North and industry, it would have been more profitable, at least as profitable as the North. But as we read in this book that I've got here, Antebellum by Hinton Rowan Helper explains why the South was so poor, and it's still suffering from that crap today. The South has never really, and also they wore out the land by incessantly overplanting cotton. Cotton takes the nutrients out of the soil terribly, to where they ruined the agricultural land of the South, which is. And now they're having to pour on more and more chemicals from companies that are the same or worse than the planters to artificially boost the land. It's all been a game, and it's all been a white civil war. It's all been based on white civil war. White wealthy against the white poor or regular people. They don't give a shit whether you're white or black or yellow or what. They're going to use you. And if we ever want to develop a real racial struggle in this country, we're going to have to understand this. And you're not going to get it from the right wing. You're not going to get it from the white nationalists. You're not going to get it from the Dukes. You're not going to get it from these people. They're never going to be honest about this thing. Maybe they're too stupid to understand or know it. They probably know it, but they find the easy way is to go along as on the periphery of the white ruling class, hoping they'll trickle down and get a little bit of the goodies, and maybe get, instead of making 20 grand a year, they can make 100 grand a year. And if they're lucky, they can climb up and be just as rotten as the other guys, you know. So we got to look in the mirror and face it. And that's why that Django was a lot more true and a lot more identification of the problem if you watch it closely and listen to what's said, instead of going along with the old-fashioned way of saying, well, we white people, we deserve having niggers hanging around the house, nigger servants, nigger this, nigger that. No, what the niggers need is separation, to be on their own playground. That's the only thing that will work. And I know that's be a difficult proposition at this time, but I'm sure that there's a certain percentage of the black race and the white race that can figure this out. And it's not too late, but the hour is getting close to where it's all going to, in this country, going to break up into a revolution, a civil war. And this time, it's going to make the first American Civil War look like a cakewalk. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. If you've got any comments on it, I'd like to hear it. If you think that how the white race has played the game in this country, I'd like to hear it. If you think it's been a good thing, because they talk about the middle class in this country, you know, up until the World War II, there wasn't a great amount of middle class as far as money's concerned. It took butchering millions of white people all over Europe and England to suppress the economy in those countries, feeding on the backs of our racial brothers and sisters, to bring those tremendous Jew-type profits to the United States and put everybody back to work and so forth, instead of having the problems of the Depression. So don't say it's just because we're hard workers. We are hard workers as a race, but the reason you had a middle class, they're through with the middle class now. They don't need the middle class. They've got mechanization, they've got all kinds of things. And, of course, they've got the ability to import millions of non-whites. And when the Jew left cries, oh, it's horrible, we're divided, we're becoming more divided. And yet the same Jew left is promoting bringing millions more people of all kinds of races and religions in here. Well, of course you're going to be divided. You'll always be divided. And it's going to get even more and more divided. But they'll say, oh, these white separatists, people like that, or black separatists or what, they're causing all the trouble. If they just go away, we'd be all right. Yeah, we're divided. And who's dividing us? It's also on the capitalist side with the bankers and all those people. Both sides are rotten, boys and girls. Both sides of the ruling class are rotten. And until enough people get together to say, no more, no more, like the man that started the working class, working man's party out in California, the Irishman, he said when he did want any more Chinese coming into the country because they were breaking the back of labor, white labor. He pointed up to those rich houses on the hill in San Francisco and said, by God, if you don't stop this, we're going to dynamite your rich asses right off the cliffs. That's what it's got to get to be. No war in other countries. No going over to other countries and bombing the shit out of them and droning them and everything else. The war for the white race is going to be right here. Right here in North America.
What the hell is your delay, Captain?
We're waiting, sir.
Waiting for what?
Private Doss.
Who the hell is Private Doss?
I always dreamed about being a doctor, but get my school. I can't stay here while all them go fight for me.
Don't you figure this war is just going to fit in with your ideas?
While everybody else is taking life, I'm going to be saving it. And that's going to be my way to serve.
This is a personal gift from the United States government designed to bring death to the enemy.
I'm sorry, Sergeant. I can't touch a gun.
You don't kill.
No, sir.
You know, quite a bit of killing does occur in war.
Private Doss does not believe in violence. Do not look to him to save you on the battlefield.
I don't think this is a question of religion. I think this is cowardice.
I fell in love with you because you weren't like anyone else. You're saying you could go to prison.
But I don't know how I'm going to live with myself if I don't stay true to what I believe. With the world so set on tearing itself apart, it doesn't seem like such a bad thing to me to want to put a little bit of it back together.
Private Doss, you are free to run into the hellfire of battle without a single weapon to protect yourself.
I'm going to get you home.
That's the trailer from Hacksaw Ridge. Mel Gibson outdid himself. I think he showed the Jews where to go in this film that they tried to put him under. But he survived. And he did a great film. And like I say, if you ever want to see real combat, what real combat is like, this is about as close to seeing real combat as you can get. I'd be very surprised if this movie made very much money. Because movies that are very correct and mean a lot historically and so forth, rarely make a lot of money. Because the stupid idiots out there, the war lovers and so forth, don't understand, or they don't want to understand. That's why the theaters today are full of cartoon-type movies. Jeez.
Why do you think she did so poorly with white working class voters?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's a party we spent. Look, I'm really proud of what Barack and I, the president and I, were able to do in the economy. But if you notice, the last 2 years in the president's State of the Union, there's been a shift in the focus, now that we got the car out of the ditch and on the road and running, on really focusing on the real inequities that exist and still exist for working class, middle class people who are left behind. And what happened was, that wasn't the central part of the campaign moving forward, in my view. Now, I said at the convention, when I introduced Hillary and praised her, I said, we don't show enough respect to that group that, in fact, has been left behind. And these are people who had good, decent jobs. My dad used to have an expression, for real. He'd say, remember, Joe, a job's about a lot more than a paycheck. It's about your dignity. It's about your respect.
He did say a lot that the trade deals had sold out the American people and that he was going to bring those jobs back and that he was going to fight for the American worker. That did cut through.
That cut through, but there was no detail about any of it.
Do you think you could have done a better job?
Oh, I don't know. They'd probably beat me alive. You know, who knows what would have happened. But I really mean that. I don't know. I mean, right, I learned how to become popular. Now that you're not running for president, and boom, man, you're the most popular guy out there.
Joe Biden knows the score. He's an old-line Democrat. I'm sure he'd like to let loose, but he won't. You know, some of this religious stuff on the internet is funny as hell. And I have to watch it. Here's one. Christmas reminds us that Jesus was a migrant like today's refugees, says Pope Francis. And if he actually existed, I say he probably looked like a lot of them, too. But actually, at best, he was a hippie-type guy, and of course he didn't exist, but he, according to the description in the Bible, he's like a hippie, or at best, just a bum that went from place to place sponging off everybody else. And that was his whole thing for, what, 3 years? Oh, you know, that's what's funny is the Jews got blamed down through the centuries for killing God, killing Jesus, when it's impossible. He never existed. They couldn't have done it. All the top rabbis know that. But they're afraid to admit it. Can you imagine all these Bible thumpers out here if suddenly they discovered there was no Jesus? Or I tell them now and they want to kill me. One good thing about it keeps all these Bible thumpers away from me. I had the Mormon boys come over a week or two ago, and I stood out there in the cold for an hour telling them why they were all screwed up, and the good-looking young white men, I said, forget about this stuff and go out and get yourself a good white woman, you know. Going around the neighborhoods, bothering the people, giving them a bunch of bullshit. Yeah, that's what I told them. But the difference between me and a lot of people, I tell them with a smile, and I laugh and joke around with them. They tend to not get mad, no matter what I say. Either that or they think, my God, this guy must have balls of steel that could stand here in the middle of this Bible-thumping area of north central Indiana with a church on every corner and state the facts that he believes that way. He must be the bravest man around. Otherwise, he'd be killed. This is what the Pope said. He said, Jesus was a migrant who reminds us of the plight of today's refugees. Well, how much of your goddamn Catholic money have you given to the refugees? And if you didn't back these wars, which you do behind the scenes and make money through your bank there in the Vatican, there'd be a lot less war. Francis told donors who contributed both a nativity set and an 82-foot tree, that's it? That's all your donors could do? Ah, jeez. The story of Jesus' birth echoes the tragic reality of invaders, he calls them migrants, on boats making their way towards Italy from the Middle East and Africa today. Yeah, they're getting even for all that bombing their countries to pieces. They're going to say, well, shit, you bombed everything to pieces down here. We're going to go up there and rape your daughters. Quote, the sad experience of these brothers and sisters recalls that of baby Jesus, who at the time of his birth could not find a place to stay when he was born in Bethlehem. The Pope said during a brief address in the Vatican's Paul VI Hall, he was then taken to Egypt to escape threats from Herod. That would have been a good trick for someone who never existed. It's all in the it's all symbolism of the zodiac and the 12 houses and all that. It's all ancient. It was all brought into Europe from North Africa and the ancient pagan religions of North Africa. And they turned it into a dog and pony show. It would be like people who revere the symbolism of Thor and Odin and Wotan and all that would actually try to bring it to life and make them real persons and do all that kind of stuff. You know, I have met Odinists who really believed literally in the symbolism and the real people of Wotan and Odin. That's just as crazy as the Jewish religion. But as long as Odinism sticks to race, physical, identifiable race, we have no problem. They should take that Statue of Liberty over to Southern Europe, maybe there on the coast of Italy, and plant it there because it says, bring us your wretched refuse. Well, you're getting, especially those South Sudanese niggers, you're getting the wretched refuse of the world. Come on, move over. If you're a Christian and love the baby Jesus, you'll allow me to come into your house and live and marry your daughter. Yeah, that's the more accurate version of the Statue of Liberty. The Mormon boys I talked to you about the other day about swallowed their teeth when I told them there were more Mormons in South America and Africa than there is in the United States. Yeah. Well, Brother Trump is filling the churches up again. In wake of Donald Trump's election, some conservative Christians have been reckoning with feelings of alienation from their peers who generally voted for Trump in strong numbers. But at least some progressive Protestant churches are experiencing the opposite effect. People have been returning to the pews. Quote, the Sunday after the election was the size of an average Palm Sunday, unquote, wrote Eric Folkert, senior pastor at Dallas's North Haven United Methodist Church. In an email, more than 30 first-time visitors signed in that day to give thanks for the Lord Trump, which is more than double the average across 3 weeks of typical year, he added. I sincerely don't recall another time when it feels like there has been a sustained desire on the people's part to be together with other progressive Christians. Wow. I'm not sure whether they're worshiping the Donald or not. They're progressives. Maybe they're progressive Republicans. Who knows? It's so crazy, man. Chaos factor. Bring it on, baby. But maybe it is these people thinking they're going to be destroyed, that Trump is the devil, and they better get back into church. Anecdotal evidence suggests that other liberal churches from a variety of denominations have been experiencing a similar spike over the past month, with their higher-than-usual levels of attendance staying relatively constant for several weeks. It's not at all clear that the Trump bump, as the writer Diana Butler Bass termed it, in a conversation with me, will be sustained beyond the first few months of the new administration, but it suggests that some progressives are searching for a moral vocabulary in grappling with the president-elect, including ways of thinking about community that don't have to do with electoral politics. Well, for progressives who expected Hillary Clinton to win because she's such a holy virgin woman, Trump's victory was a shock. Quote, I expected that I would be talking about reaching out to people who lost, unquote, said Deborah Hafner, the minister at a non-creedal Unitarian Universalist church in Reston, Virginia. In an interview, quote, my music director and I had talked about The Girl on Fire as our last song. Most of the people in our congregation supported the progressive candidate. I call it, she was a regressive candidate. Instead, she said people walked in here like they were going to a funeral. They were grieving. They were crying. They were scared. And they needed hope because they wanted to leave the country and flee the place. Because Donald Trump is going to get them, man. He's going to get them. Yeah, he's going to get them. But as he gets all these Jews in his cabinet and starts doing quite a bit of progressive things, he won't call it progressive, but maybe they'll like him more. Especially if they get the money in the pocket. Once they get the money in the pocket, Trump's going to be okay. Well, Ivanka Trump and other Orthodox Jewish converts to fall under new guidelines. Israel's two chief rabbis are promising new guidelines that will make it possible to determine whether a conversion performed outside of Israel would be valid in their eyes. So Ivanka could go to Israel, maybe. Or flee to Israel, maybe too.